listening to Patty Pigskin with Gary Somerville in association with DraftKings.
So Barry and Jer are here with me for our first ever Zoom threesome. And remember, it's not gay when it's in a three-way, according to Lady Gaga and Justin Timberlake. So how are we, lads?
Doing good. It's got the gang back together after almost 2 years.
I know, yeah. Real life responsibilities and priorities kind of getting in the way. So thanks very much for coming back on. I know you're down in Tampa, Barry, so you can tell us about that in a minute. Jer, I think you're here in Boston with me in the cold, freezing your balls off, right?
I am, yes.
You can tell by the tone of voice there. Yep, I'm fucking freezing. So we'll get into the elephant in the room in a minute, but normally listeners of this podcast will know that I dedicate each episode to the best player in NFL history who has worn the jersey number of each episode. But it's different this time, as I'm going to dedicate this episode to a man who anyone that really listens to football podcasts probably know. And that's Chris Wessling, a.k.a. the Mailman, one of the four hosts of the Around the NFL podcast, who sadly lost his battle with cancer last week. Lads, just awful news, really, right? To get it right before the Super Bowl of all times about Chris. Just my heart sank, Barry, when you sent us that message. How was everybody feeling about it?
It's just awful. It's one of those things where you heard news of how obviously it was getting worse, but you kind of kept on hoping it would be holding on more and more. And obviously the Super Bowl doesn't have to be this important thing for the timing of it, but it did just feel like one of those things where, as much as he covers the sport, it felt even kind of shittier in a sense that he missed one last big game in a sense too.
Mm. Yeah. And myself and Jared had only been talking about it like a week before, because Jared had texted me saying, did you hear Wes on the podcast there a week or two ago? And I hadn't have listened to it. So I tuned in, and like, you could tell he wasn't doing great. And just as the weeks went on, he wasn't really interacting with people on social media and stuff like that. And I kind of feared the worst, but still, like, to hear that news was just devastating. And I don't know if you guys, I think Jer had listened to it. They did a podcast there the other day, and it was just a dedication to Wes. And like, I was like, just some of the stories that they were coming out with of him were so funny. Like, there was one where I think he had just moved to LA from Tybee Island, which is, I guess, off the coast of Ohio, I think. And he crashed into somebody, or had like a bump against somebody's car. And instead of him just dealing with the situation, he just gave the other person the car and just said, fuck it. He just gave them the car, and that was it. I hadn't heard that story before. I just thought it was so funny that he was just like, yeah, I'm not ready to deal with this. But yeah, Jer, I'm sure lots of stories of Wes that you've heard over the years on the podcast kind of made you smile and appreciate the man.
I will make one correction. Tybee Island's off the coast of Georgia.
Oh, my mistake. You would
Cincinnati to go live off the coast of Ohio.
Because he was from Ohio, right? That's where I was getting the mix Cincinnati. Up there, yeah.
But no, it was the first NFL podcast I started listening to back in 2014. It was like good NFL podcasts, and it appeared. And I think what was good about them was that they were four friends, and it's similar to the way we do it. It's very personal. We all get on with it. We play football together. They play softball, everything together. You hear podcasts and you can tell people only have the working relationship and they don't have friendships outside of it. Mm. And then when you hear that, like, some of them used to be each other's bosses, and then suddenly they come to the NFL and they're all on a level playing field, and it just was so much better. But just the most random stories from a guy, you know, like, you're talking about that podcast where, like, he just really didn't care, and he went on a pub crawl in a limo. He finished work in his postman's outfit and just went on the absolute rip in his on a pub crawl. It was just like, what a guy, you know? And you know, when you spoke to him,
yeah,
you reached out and he was saying, hey, well, let's speak now then. Let's do a podcast right now. None of this schedule it with somebody. He was just good to give you the time. Very interactive on the social media sphere. Also very good at blocking people that just chatted absolute horseshit at times. You know? And he would call them out. But a man that just loves sports and football, you know, and his knowledge of it was unparalleled, I think. Mm. Like, you go back into the 30s or the 40s and he's naming players and stats. he just knew everything that was going on and lost to football, but just, I suppose, a loss to the world, a man that good.
Yeah. Just to touch on, like he was so good to give me his time, because I didn't even know, like, he didn't even sound like he was going through treatment at the time, but he did say, oh, well, you know, I'm going through, I've had a heavy round of chemo this week, I'm actually feeling good, so let's do it now. I was like, Jesus, that just says a lot about the guy, that he was, you know, going through so much, but he was still willing to give his time to complete strangers who he'd never even met before, someone that just reached out to him on Twitter, you know, for a chat. So, yeah, just all around great guy. I think it was very touching that so many people in the NFL Network were, you know, paying tributes to him, whether it was like Colleen Wolfe or Rich Eisen, all these people. Like, you could just tell, like, you could hear the emotion in their voice that he meant so much to them as friends, but also just the NFL Network as well. Just said a lot about the guy, that so many people were coming out and saying how they had a profound effect on his life. So, yeah, RIP, Chris Wessling, the mailman. Thinking about his family, obviously a huge uphill climb for his wife, Lakeisha. And I think it hit me harder because he is a recent dad like me. And a lot of the times I become personally invested in these cancer stories because I wanted what I do. But normally I'm able to kind of distance myself somewhat. But I think this time it just hit me more because he is a recent dad to a young child. And I'm just like, oh my God, I just couldn't even imagine. You know, what the family is going through. So I think that's why I got a little bit more emotional than normal, just because, you know, being a new dad myself, I just can't even imagine. But yeah, I know there's a GoFundMe for his family, so I'll try stick a link up as well when I post this podcast or over the weekend if people want to contribute. Anyone that's listened to Chris, I'm sure, has learned a lot from the man. So if we can repay him in some small way, I think that would be a nice little gesture. But he did have, moving on to the game, he did have the Buccaneers, I believe, winning that game, and Tom Brady getting a seventh ring. So wherever he was watching it, I'm sure he was happy to see Tom Brady get the job done. And our resident Buccaneers fan here, Barry, I'm sure you are equally as ecstatic for your team to win the Super Bowl. So knee-jerk reactions. What did think?
I mean, so to take a step back for one second, so as you both have known me, you won't, like, we started all being friends in the height of the Jameis Winston era, where I would say, and we've had a literal podcast walking through this, where I kept on saying for so long, we were building such a good foundation of everything, but we just consistently had this quarterback who we could never rely upon when you needed that one drive, or I would say in the opposite, when you needed that one time to not make a mistake. And it was a season kind of like, I would say that I just couldn't have seen coming in any regard. Because even as we made the playoffs, my only thought was, we should beat Washington. If we were to beat the Saints, that's an awesome kind of like litmus test of like, this was a success for the year. Because we would probably be what I think we now know is the team to retire Drew Brees. Finally get him out of my division after 15 years. But I fully expected us to lose to the Packers. And so my wife was laughing at me the entire time. So as we beat the Packers off the Kevin King holding call, I'm sitting there in disbelief, just kind of being like, wait, no, that like is a weird call, because I'm like, I'm so used to just being an objective fan because my team has never been invested. Like my team has never been in a big moment in my adult life. So even in that moment, I couldn't dissociate the, well, they haven't been calling the defensive holding call all game, to, oh my God, my team is going to the Super Bowl kind of moment, because it's such a weird experience that I've never had my team be there where I could be that, I would say, just subjective about the experience. So when it came to the Super Bowl itself, I was just a kid. I felt entirely like a kid again, because it started off in the sense of punt, punt, punt. And I was all like, oh my God, we're giving Mahomes too much time. And then what we realize is that, you know, the only reason objectively to go into that game to say the Chiefs would win is because they have Mahomes. Because as we had all talked about in our text thread, almost every other part of the game lent itself to the Bucs having an advantage, especially the Chiefs' banged up offensive line. So it's a scenario where we win by, you know, a crazy score, and not just, and we'll get into this, but like, it's not because of the Chiefs playing badly. It's just because that entire base that we had built up for all those Jameis years finally got a like right driver of the car, in a sense that everything could function. And what we saw, frankly, was, I know it's Tom Brady's seventh ring, but what we saw was a dominant overall team performance that frankly just left me feeling so fucking proud.
I can't remember such a dominant performance by one team in quite a while. Can you guys, like, for it to be such a, not just scoreline wise, but just like, they just bullied them the whole game. I can't really remember in recent memory.
Broncos,
like
Broncos-Panthers.
So seven, eight years ago? Something like that?
So that one was five. I was almost going to say the other Broncos one, Jared. The Broncos getting bullied by the Seahawks 2 years before that, too.
Yeah.
But to your point, like, it doesn't happen that often. And it does, like, come off the screen of, like, whoa, wow, this is, you know, all things aside of Mahomes, we're just like, wow, this is, like, two different teams playing right now.
Yeah,
it's not a typical Brady Super Bowl. You know, it's just a close game all the way until the end. He just, they dominated that from the get-go.
I think it was like, it was set up, you know, the way Brady feeds off these narratives, similar to the way Jordan, you know, in The Last Dance, he would almost give himself these narratives in his head to make him more competitive. You know, he'd be like, and I took that personally. And like, I just like the way the stepping stones for Brady here, it was like, you have the Saints. Okay, the Saints have beaten them twice. There's no way in hell Brady's going to allow a team to beat him three times in one season. So there's narrative number one. And then he comes across, you know, the guy who's won the MVP, or who everybody was saying the better QB, and they're always stacking them against each other, Aaron Rodgers against Brady. So he had that. He was like, he wants to go out there and prove that he, when it came down to it and the chips were down, that he was going to beat this MVP QB. And then the last step was then, you know, this young pretender who everybody was saying could be the next, you know, multiple Super Bowl winning quarterback. Again, Brady has this narrative where he's like, well, okay, I want to prove that the old man still has it and I want to beat him. So I kind of like how all these storylines were set up. There was always that underlying narrative that he had in his head to prove that he was better than all these guys. And I think it was set up quite well from there.
Well, it's crazy to your point. Like, you couldn't set up a better three in a row kind of matchup of QBs if you ever wanted to submit a case for Brady. Because, I mean, frankly, if we're looking at this, the only thing that was missing was playing Peyton Manning in the first round, because he essentially just beat everyone else who someone wanted to try to compare to him in like a GOAT conversation.
Yeah.
Which was just crazy. Sorry, phone. This is the fun of how this goes.
This is the beauty of live podcasting here, you know?
Exactly.
Is it Tom Brady asking if you want to go for a few beers?
I hope.
Maybe he's, I'd say he's a bit hungover. Judging by the videos of him yesterday, he looked like he was all over the place having a great
Yeah, our biggest accomplishment is we've successfully turned him into a Florida man over one season. So it's pretty great.
Yeah, he was in rough shape. I was like, is it the sea legs mixed with all the booze or what is it? But, you know, he doesn't really drink throughout the year. So one or two beers, that guy is going to be on his ass.
It caught up to him pretty quickly there.
Yeah, yeah. So you were saying, Barry, it was set up kind of nicely with the run of QBs that you had to beat.
Well, so it was interesting, yeah, because I would say of all the ones we compare against, we say, okay, he beat the guy who's competing with for every career record. He beats the guy who is now the reigning MVP. And for years of the mid-2000s, we would say is the closest to compare to Brady, and we would say the more talented, aesthetically pleasing passer in Rodgers. And then obviously the guy who's had statistically the greatest start to a career of anyone ever, to that point, in Mahomes, where he had reached his second Super Bowl before he had gotten his 10th career loss. So it's like an insane back-to-back-to-back. But I want to take a step back for 1 second, which is to say, I thought about this, and I want to get both your takes on this. So I'll give you the hypothetical to say, let's say that Brady is there the entire year. So where he brings in the winning culture, holds people more accountable, gets us more disciplined as the year goes on, because our penalties definitely decreased as the year went on. But let's just say before a random one of the playoff matches, he gets COVID, can't play, and our backup is one of the other 31 NFL starting quarterbacks. How many other replacement quarterbacks could you slot into each of those three games, the Saints, the Packers, the Chiefs, and the Bucs still win? And the reason why I ask is the Saints game was interesting in the sense that we win, but we don't actually really generate much on offense. It's entirely thanks to Drew Brees and Drew Brees giving the ball to our defense and us scoring off short fields. And the Chiefs game, we just talked about, is such a dominant performance where I think a lot of quarterbacks could have been in Brady's position. And not completed 21 of 28 or all that, but the idea of put up at least 10 points. Mm. When I come back to it, I say the Super Bowl is amazing. And I know Brady obviously gets the seventh ring and that's the major narrative. The biggest use of having Tom Brady to us this year was the Packers game. Without him, I don't think we win that game. And I think you can really replace it with maybe like one other quarterback in the league and say, if we had had them in addition, we would have won. That was a really tough back and forth game that required a whole lot. And if we don't have, you know, the Scotty Miller right before halftime touchdown or those big plays, we probably don't even make it to the Super Bowl. But once we're in the Super Bowl, I actually think a lot of NFL quarterbacks could have started for us that day and we win with how dominant that team was, which is, and I don't say that as a slight to Brady. I say that as a point of where I'm just so proud as a Bucs fan of what a team we had put together, where I could look at that and say, wow, that wasn't just a once in a lifetime crapshoot of like, how did we win this game? That was a, we were just proved ourselves to be the most dominant team. And that was just the most reassuring part.
Yeah. I think it's hard because it's not just the talent that Brady brings. It's the mentality and the locker room leadership that he brings, you know? So like, you know, the Bucs were 7-5 at one point. I think that's when like playoff Brady kicked in, where he's like, all right, guys, cut the fucking shit here. You know, we're in this, we've got a chance here to go all the way. And in that scenario, I'm not sure there was many QBs that could have rallied the troops to win, what was it, nine games? Ten in a row, right?
Because nine, yeah.
Nine. Like that's what Brady brings to the plate is, okay, yes, obviously a very talented quarterback, but it's the leadership and the killer mentality and win at all costs. You know, sending the guys texts every night saying we will win the Super Bowl. It's that's what separates Brady for me personally away from all these other quarterbacks that could have stood in and performed on the field and done something. But it's all the other things that Brady brings to the plate. I feel like that's what separates him from everybody else. Jer, you think? What's your thoughts? Jer be like, Nick Foles could have done it.
He's probably right.
In the sense that they made the comment, you know, when Manning left the Colts and went to Denver, he brought that winning work ethic and just that mentality that changed the whole locker room. But again, I do agree with Barry that was such a dominant game in the Super Bowl that I think you stick Rodgers in there, you stick Mahomes on that team. I think, again, you stick there's a couple of QBs in there. You stick in Teddy Bridgewater. I don't think he wins that game, you know? Because he's not making some of those throws maybe to Gronk or to Antonio. But I think I never thought about it, but as Barry pointed out, the Saints, they shot themselves. They killed themselves in that game. But it was the Packers game where you needed a winner to take control of the team and go, I'm putting you all on my back and we're going to win this game.
Yeah.
And I think maybe one or two QBs in the NFL, if you threw, again, Aaron Rodgers, and he was in the same game, but he lost. But I think you could throw him on that and say, if somebody's going to bring a team and put them on his back, it's him. Mahomes, like, you can't fault him for the Super Bowl. That guy had nearly 500 yards behind the line of scrimmage running around trying to keep plays open, making throws where he's like a foot off the ground and the throws it 40 yards for the receiver to hit it off his helmet. But it's just, you know, it was a Super Bowl where I didn't care who won. I was able to sit down and say, right, I'll enjoy this football game. And I didn't. Because it wasn't that competitive after the first quarter. And it was just sitting watching Brady, Gronk just destroy, and Fournette, who was everything the Jaguars hoped they had drafted and didn't get, you know? I do wonder, though, Barry, what are your thoughts? What do you think this team's chances of a repeat are? Because it felt like they sold out. This was the year. They brought in all this talent. And it's like, how do you re-sign or keep it all there if they're only on one-year contracts?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. So I guess a couple things change, which make it interesting. So it all depends on in a few regards of how valuable you view a few people who are free agents. So like Antonio Brown is a free agent. I don't care if he's gone because frankly, I know he gets a touchdown. So therefore we get this cool stat of no one who's like scored a point in the Super Bowl for the Bucs was on the roster the prior year. Mm-hmm. But frankly, Scotty Miller could have run that 1 yard slant. Tyler Johnson could have ran the 1 yard slant. Like we could have had a lot of guys who did that. Otherwise, we don't really get a whole ton out of the Antonio Brown experience. Mm-hmm. Fournette is a loss, but at the same time, like, I kind of wonder if they're going to either one, get him at a deal for like another 1 year, let's run it back type of thing, or two, just draft a guy in the draft as another kind of change of pace guy. Mm-hmm. The big ones coming back are, we need to make sure we sign Shaq Barrett. We need to make sure we sign Chris Godwin. We have a lot of cap space to do that. So I think we can do those. But the bigger change is, frankly, that Breeze is out of the division. Mm-hmm. Breeze, by all accounts, he's, you know, signed from $24 million down to a $1 million salary. So I assume he's not taking a $23 million discount to break more ribs. Mm-hmm. So he's likely retired. So all of a sudden, the Saints, who have won the division four straight years, are out. And the Falcons look like they're, you know, actively having to deny about trading Matt Ryan. So clearly they seem to be in a good spot. And the Panthers just tried to trade Bridgewater to get Stafford. So clearly they're not happy with where they're at either. Mm-hmm. So a scenario of, do I feel like we are these like shoo-in favorites to win like the NFC and like go back to the Super Bowl and all that? I mean, I think we're in the consideration. I think we're in contention. It's going to be the classic ones. It's going to be us. It's going to be the Rams now with Stafford. It's going to be the Packers. It's going to be those same kind of teams, but we're just going to have a big leg up in the sense of we get to run through our division, kind of like how Tom used to do with the AFC East more.
You know how he left the NFC East out of that? And he named the three teams, Gary?
Yeah. For some reason, I can't imagine why I did that.
By the way, Jerry, I appreciate you asking that to Barry, because in my little chicken scratches notes, I had, Barry, do you think that the team can keep this team together? Because, you know, they've got, last time I checked, they had $30 million in cap space going into 2021. But obviously, they've got these big free agents. So if you had to pick three key free agents, which ones would you be putting your money on for the Buccaneers to keep?
Yeah, I mean, so in order, I would say Shaq Barrett and then Godwin are the main two. I would say everything beyond that is negotiable. I would say third, I think he's a free agent, is JPP. Where okay. I want to make sure we obviously keep that, because having sides would be very important. But Shaq is definitely the one who is like the bigger priority there in terms of just keeping that consistent and younger edge rusher.
Yeah. To touch on both your points as well, lads, by the way, because you mentioned, you know, Jared, AB scored a touchdown, Fournette scored a touchdown. Like, those guys were making about $3 million combined. Like, I think that's super impressive that they got two Super Bowl touchdowns out of guys that were essentially playing for peanuts by today's standards. And, you know, Gronk being another guy they brought in. So all four touchdown contributors were not even on the team last year, which I think is, it says a lot about Brady that he recruited these guys. And when it came down to it, all of them contributed. Like, Fournette was running the rock all day. Gronk stepped up and had an amazing stat line for a tight end in the Super Bowl. Like, a guy his age, even though somehow him and Kelce are the same age, which that fucking blows my mind when I think of
it. It's crazy.
That one is still, you know, at his prime, and well, you'd never think Gronk was on the decline judging from that performance. But, you know, all these guys that Brady brought in, all of them contributed to the win, you know, putting points up on the scoreboard. I think that was just, says a lot about Brady that he believed in these guys, they believed in him, they brought it all together, the planets aligned, and they all did it. Yeah,
two Super Bowls in 2 years, hasn't played a snap in either game.
That's pretty nice, isn't it? I mean, that guy took a beating over the years, so he's happy to, you know, he still has his rings when he looks back. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion. He still has a lot of stats for when he was with the other two teams, the Eagles and the Bills. So I don't think he's too bothered that he didn't get any snaps, is he?
Jer, I think we call that guy a locker room vet these days.
Yeah.
Just a great presence in the locker room.
Same as Brady and some of these New England guys. Froze his ass off in Philly. Froze his ass off in New York, froze his ass off in Kansas, comes to Tampa, topless on boat parties, just Don Perry on, everything going down. Body's in perfect condition because he didn't get hit once, you know, just living life.
So speaking of boat parties, Barry was kindly sending us pictures from sunny Tampa, Florida there yesterday. Were you actually on a boat yourself, Barry? Or what was
you were on land
just kind of peering out over the water and watching all these Super Bowl champs getting wasted?
Yeah, so a lot of Tampa is basically has the Hillsborough River just running through it. So we were just standing on a bit of land that was right nearby. There's basically a lot of just docks that spray out every now and then, and we found one where no one was standing around. So we were like, sure, let's go to that one. And the boats come by, and you know, Brady's driving his own boat that he has. Apparently he just got to Florida, said I need a $2 million boat. Why not? Gronk, Mike Evans, all the receivers are on the same boat, and Gronk's teaching them all how to take their shirts off. Bruce is on his own boat, drinking away.
And then we Bruce was having a good time, was he?
Oh, Bruce was having a ball. And then we stacked all of our D linemen on the same boat, which was a sturdy vessel, I have to say. And half of them showed up with the white t-shirts, but the picture of Brady in his combine photo with the blue boxers. Man, this is just some weird vibes. But it was good. There was I would say that's the moment where it hit me the most of just how, it was definitely just pride of how many different ships I saw passing by where I looked at that guy and I was like, we picked that guy and he's only played for us and we built that up kind of thing. To bring back for 1 second, sorry. A friend asked me at the end of the game, who I was the most happy for, on the Bucks for winning these games. So my answer was Antonio Brown was 53, Brady was 52. In the sense of I'm happy for Brady, but there's a lot of other people who are I'm going to find some other easy reason to be happier for. I was amazed how quickly on the top of my list, Gronk came up though. So for me, number one was Levante David, completely underappreciated. Even in this game, Devin White has the better stat line, but Levante David just played such great individual, within the 10-yard line coverage on Kelsey. Number two, Mike Evans just slaved away for all of Jameis's career and getting overthrown despite being 6'5", and now just has it all work out. But really high up there was Gronk, because as we saw in that game, I was so happy with just how healthy he looked and how happy he looked.
Mm.
Even compared to 2 years ago in that Rams Super Bowl where he could barely walk and parts like that. And it just felt like, it felt like we all knew he was going to be retired because of just how labored everything looked for him. In this game, I'm not trying to say that he's what he used to be in terms of a prime Gronk, but he looked good and he looked happy and everything about it. It just left me feeling really good about the experience.
I know why. Alex Guerrero rubbing them down.
There we go.
In the little massage parlor. He's just feeling nice and pliable. No, I agree with you, Barry. He did look somewhat the Gronk of old, he was making catches and then instead of just pretty much getting stopped where he caught it, he was actually trucking guys and, he was able to put moves on people. Yeah, it was good to see him. Everybody has a soft spot for Gronk. He's just the big lump and he's amazing at football and he's the guy that a lot of people can relate to because, he likes his beers. He just likes having fun. And I think, yesterday was another example of that where he was doing all sorts of shit with the Vince Lombardi. But I think everybody sees a bit of themselves in Gronk in that, yes, we are nowhere nearly as talented and athletic as the guy. But, we'd be that guy. If we were in his situation, we'd be having a fucking whale of a time, getting absolutely hammered drunk, partying up a storm and just enjoying the moment and not being... the consummate profession like the NFL is trying players to be. It's all right, kind of relax a little bit and don't be going overboard. And Gronk is just his own man. And he's just always been that way.
I think that's what was cool about the boat parade, to your point, is this was Tom's seventh. And he just looked so much more full of energy and kind of happy with the experience. And I know there's a million reports that come out of oh, he gets to coach now with Bruce. He loves how much less chastised he is with this organization. And I'm not trying to get into this referendum on Bill Belichick, but I just mean that the idea is it really showed of just how much everyone enjoyed the experience that was this year. And for one small part of just for the Super Bowl, because I saw this stat and I thought it was hilarious. The Bucks have been in two Super Bowls. They've won both. And the combined margin of winning both, they've won those two games by more than the Pats have won all six of their Super Bowls.
No way.
Or the Steelers have won all six of their Super Bowls.
Wow.
So we don't make it that often, but when we do, it's a blowout, which is hilarious. So to your point, Jared, not that exciting, but for us, we're just oh, great, we don't have to worry.
And it's been such a turnaround for Tampa because, you had the Lightning win the Stanley Cup. You had the Rays went to game 7 and now you have the Buccaneers. For a small market sports city like Tampa to have three teams in their, respective championship games is just unbelievable because the last team to do it, of course, was the city where Tom Brady was living at the time a couple of years ago with the Red Sox, the Bruins and the Patriots. Is just pure coincidence or is there just, I don't know, Tom Brady comes from championship city of Boston down to Tampa and all of a sudden everybody's up in their game and three teams go to the finals.
Yeah. I mean, so two things on that. One, I'm definitely waiting for someone to trademark and make the shirts that say Champa Bay.
love it.
So I need one of those. But two is I looked at it. none of the Boston times have they ever had three teams reach the finals in the same year, which I thought was even crazier. Because to your point, like in the history of Tampa sports, we had made it to four different finals, like across our history of all the sports, and we reached three of them in the same year. This year is crazy.
Unbelievable. And I think that the last
thing that is in the same seasons, because the same seasons could go over two different calendar years. Whereas because of COVID, everything is like played out for Tampa to all be in it in one calendar year.
Yeah, it is funny. So like to your exact point on that, Jer, so this past year, Gary, your daughter Ella is born on my birthday.
Really? I didn't know
and
that.
And the Lightning win the Stanley Cup on that night too.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And the Lightning would not have ever been able to do that because that's normally in June. So yeah, COVID turned into some weird calendar year stuff where I was like, oh, I got an interesting birthday present. And now I also have like a co-birthday mate.
So you're basically saying Ella is responsible for all Tampa's fortunes this year. Is that what
I wouldn't rule it out.
So look at the Irish. She is half Irish, half American. So who knows?
One thing, Barry, I wanted to pick up on, and being on the defensive line and coming across a lot of big offensive line, and we played with some guys in our league that aren't big, but they're strong as oxes. And I think one of the draft picks that came out this year was Tristan Wirfs, because everybody's seen him jumping out of a swimming pool. And they were like, what is this? This kid's like over 300 pounds. But I seen a stat the other day. He started all 20 games. He didn't miss a single offensive snap. So 1,280 plays he was on the field for this year. One penalty since week five. One sack allowed all season, and he's a Super Bowl champ. So are we putting this down? I'm curious now, Dad, that this is an extremely talented guy, because we all look at Quentin Nelson for the Colts and some of his crazy stats that he's got there. Or are we saying that like Brady coached this guy, that if Jameis Winston was the QB, there'd probably be maybe six or seven sacks because Winston go off running or something and he'd end up ruining the kid's stat or something, whereas Brady gets rid of the ball. He's not going to take a hit and try and keep a play alive. So you come down to the guy's greatly talented, or it helped having Brady there and Brady did this.
Yeah. And so, Jared, I'm going to say this, and I don't mean it's a cop-out at all. I think the answer is both. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to have great form, great execution, great technique to consistently like hold back a pass rusher for even the minimal, let's call it 2 seconds that you need to really like let a play develop. Then you combine it with Tom knowing where he wants to go, not being as mobile in the sense of he's not going to drift out of the pocket. So you have a clear range of where you need to hold the guy, but also being quick on his release of where he wants to be going. I think that pairs together in a really good way. So the point is, like, I don't think if you have Jameis that Tristan's 2 seconds of his pass block gets worse. But I think what ends up happening is that you push the guy, if you're right tackle, you know, far to the right, to the outside. And then you realize that Jameis for some reason scrambles to that side. So it turns into a sack, whereas if Brady stays in the center of the pocket, you pushing him to that side is completely safe. So I think it's a really good pairing of the two, admittedly, Jer.
Mm-hmm.
Jer, you're killing me here. I had the Giants draft on Tristan Wirfs in my mock draft, and they took Andrew Thomas out of Georgia. So to see him go all the way with Brady was just a dagger through my heart. But the guy balled out.
Like this tiny little town in Iowa, you know, and he's a Super Bowl winning player. And I think that stat I sent to you both before, that it was off one of these Max Preps or NCAA Facebook. For all the domination that we hear of Alabama year in, year out, and they just trudge these NFL players, there wasn't one single player on those active rosters that went to Alabama,
I couldn't believe that when you tell me that. I couldn't believe it. Like, they're like a conveyor belt there. They just churn out all these guys.
But then you hear that
blew my mind.
Saban runs them so much into the ground in college that they just falter, some of them, when they get to the NFL.
Jeez, don't say that to Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry's a bit different because he's one offensive player of the year and he's continued to go. But you've seen a lot, like, again, Mark Barron.
Trent Richardson.
You know?
Yeah, Trent Richardson and Mark Barron, yeah.
You know, just players you think they're going to ball out and then they just kind of filter out of the league or filter into teams where they're backups.
Transition. Also helps them. Mike Mayock just drafts every Alabama guy anyways, so it's hard for the other teams to have them.
Transitioning nicely into people who may be fizzling out soon. Jer, we're going to talk about your boy Carson Wentz before we wrap it up. We'll do some Eagles chat here. Mm-hmm. It seems to be the two horses in the race right now are the Bears and the Indianapolis Colts. Mm-hmm. Is your money on either of those teams, or do you reckon there's a dark horse that might be coming up on the outside?
I was in the Colts in my head, and then somebody I work with, or works for me, he was like, I hear you could be trading your QB to my team. I'm like, who's your team? He's like, the Bears. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I just had the phone on do not disturb the whole day. And suddenly when I take it off, there's just tweet after tweet that the Bears are in the race now. And you're reading about it. But I just think for all the stuff that we joke about teams in the NFL, the way the Browns have been running all this, the Eagles are a joke. And I think a lot of it comes back to Howie Roseman. And either that guy has some dirt on Jeffrey Lurie that he is not being fired, but I just think the way he's handled everything from signing players and contracts given to players that are over the hill, like rewarding players that won the Super Bowl with big contracts and they were past their prime, to this with Carson Wentz. Like, I love Carson Wentz. I think he's a baller. Like, if you're looking for, he's 6'6", he's 250, he's got the arm, all the physical attributes, he's the guy you want. Then there's the you can get into the nitty-gritty that he made one playoff game in 4 years and he got injured in that game because he was injured in every other season. It's like, do we keep this guy? Do we trade this guy? You give the guy a $100 million contract. You don't get him a number one receiver in the NFL in the draft. I don't like who we drafted. I think we passed up on CeeDee Lamb. We passed up on Justin Jefferson. You know, just two tall receivers. And then you go and draft a QB in the second round. And he said all the right things, you know, oh, it's great competition. But you signed a guy to a $100 million contract and you drafted a QB in the second round of the draft. It's not really saying much to him. So, and then we just got decimated with injuries. All pro right guard, right tackle, left tackle. And then you sign a 38-year-old, what's his name now? Jason Peters to come back and play guard. And then he wants more money to move to tackle. And I don't know, we're in cap hell, you know, and you're sitting there with two QBs, and then there's the whole benching of them and then throwing the game at the end of the year. And then Howie comes out and says, we're sticking by the coach, and then he fires him the next day. And it's like, what is going on here? And apparently Wentz is speaking to everyone but Howie Roseman. He's having conversations with Lurie, the new coach, all the other coaches, players just won't speak to Howie Roseman. So
crazy.
Sound good.
The Eagles are wanting a Stafford-type trade package. And again, I could see why they would want that. You know, like if Wentz isn't playing at an MVP level the year we go to the Super Bowl, we don't even make it to the playoffs. And everybody's given the credit to Foles for winning the game, but if Wentz didn't play the way he did, we wouldn't have never been in an ability to win the Super Bowl. So I think they've every right to ask for something like that. It's out there who wants to win, who's got the cap space to take on his contract. That's the big thing. And I think the Bears have it and the Colts have it. I think, but again, you trade Wentz to the Bears and you got Foles sitting on the roster as well again. So you sent back to the Eagles as part of the trade package as a backup then to Hurts. And this is where I bring up to Howie Roseman. The guy could just hold out and just miss up the best opportunity for, this is the best and finally you're going to get, and he's going to hold out for more. And then suddenly that team withdraws their offer. And suddenly now you're stuck with this guy that is like 35, 40 million in dead cap space if you try to cut him when you're already nearly 40 million over the cap anyway. So,
and the cap has come down, right, to 180 million.
Yeah,
hasn't it? So it's come down, what, 20 million, something like that? 10%?
Yeah, so it's come down 20. Jared, one question, I know we're like all at a time where we kind of need to jump, but just to wrap this up for one second. So I hear you on all the destinations. I agree with you that I think it's either Colts or Bears. And I think, you know, one first round would be great. If you can get two, even better. The question to me is, let's just say that they use this offseason to really commit to Carson. So they use the pick to say, let's take Jamar Chase or Devontae Smith. Mm-hmm. They reinvest whatever cap they have into more offensive line depth, all those different things. Do you think this is something that can be worked back in the relationship, though? Or do you think there's just too much scar tissue from, like, either Carson's side, the Eagles, like, Roseman's side, whatever it may be, that even if you can try to, like, halfway try it, it just won't really be the same, and therefore, like, you might as well cut ties now while you can?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's, if Roseman's there, I don't think you can repair the relationship. But then it comes down to then you're going to have Jalen Hurts sitting there pissed off then, you know, and it's kind of like you got two QBs. And again, everybody's questioning Wentz's competitive attitude here. You know, it's like he's throwing his toys out of the pram. I want to be traded. I don't want to play here anymore. Yet then you see in social media, he's this guy of God and he's charity this and charity that. And then he's an absolute prima donna in the background. You know? But I think if Roseman's there, I don't think Wentz will want to stay there. And that's the issue. I think, again, we had nobody last year. We need to cut Alshon Jeffrey, just gone. Cut DeSean Jackson, gone. Didn't work out with either of them. You need to get somebody that's going to come in and be a true number one receiver, tall, fast. That can be Devontae Smith or Jamar Chase. Offensive line, you need serious reinvestment there. Like, again, I'd say you don't need serious reinvestment. If Brandon Brooks can come back from his second Achilles on his different leg and he can play all pro again, you've got Lane Johnson, if he's back healthy, and Andre Dillard, you've got two tackles that are good. Jason Kelsey, is he going to retire? Is he not going to retire at center? You could have the basis of a good offensive line there. You've got a good running back room. You just need some receivers. You need a good defense. But I think the biggest loss to Carson was when John DeFilippo left and Frank Reich. And I think that's, if you're a true Eagles fan or you're a true NFL fan, you'll notice that once they left after winning the Super Bowl, just Wentz went down. His decision-making wasn't great. He's the guy that Brady is not. He's the guy that's going to try and keep a play alive and get creamed by a massive defensive lineman. And then you turn into Andrew Luck, where you can't throw anymore and you got to take a year out and get stem cell treatment and your career's over by 29, 30. You know? And that's just the difference between Brady and all these younger QBs that are out there trying to keep plays alive and getting killed. And that's the thing, you invest $100 million into a guy who's only going to be around for 7 years. It's not really your QB of the future. And then you've got somebody like Jalen Hurts there who doesn't do stuff like that, is mobile, changes up the offense because defenses then have to prepare for him to take off in a read option. So, yeah, I don't know. I kind of probably went on a winded answer there.
Well, if you were going into the bookies tomorrow and putting money on what team he was going to go to, if he goes, which it sounds like he is going to go, but if you're a betting man, where would you have Carson Wentz playing in 2021?
I was saying, when I was a smart man, I'd go to the Colts just because of the protection that they've got there.
Yeah,
they can help him, and he's going back to Frank Reich. From the Eagles, I think the team probably has the most assets would be the Bears because they could give you Nick Foles back, and then you could probably resign what's-his-face to be the backup there.
Mitch
Trubisky, he could be your backup. You could sign him on a low contract because ain't going to be many people out there wanting Mitch Trubisky. So I think for the Bears, but then it's, you get the first round pick back, but what else can you get along with Foles, you know, because that team's having to eat a lot of money.
Yeah. And
that's,
I'd want to make sure that Allen Robinson is staying there as well. Like if you're signing with the Bears, you want Allen Robinson staying, but it sounds like he doesn't want to go.
What are you talking about? He has Jimmy Graham. That's a number one
option. I loved, by the way, it was Jimmy Graham that scored a touchdown and just walked down the tunnel, right? He's like, fuck it, I'm walking off into the sunset. Wasn't that him?
Yeah, 100%.
That was brilliant. I love that moment.
The one thing I'll say for a curious, like, interesting other team, and it's not to go on, I promise, I'll just, like, end on this point, but the Panthers could be a team that surprises us with this because they also have a similar quarterback for two more years, similar salary as Foles. They could ship back to be the guy who helps Jalen learn a lot in Teddy. And the Panthers have a ton of cap space.
Mm-hmm. How much are we talking? Like 40, 50 million, something like that?
So they had 50 million just committed to dead cap this past year because of the retirements of Keekly and parts like that.
Jesus, 50 million.
Yeah, and so almost 40 of that comes off the book. So you're talking about a lot that just is available to them right away.
Yeah, that's a good shout. I never even thought about that. We'll wrap it up. You know, it's been a crazy year for the NFL with COVID and stuff. So just wanted to get your final takes really on the season. You know, it could be any topic, but, you know, I just personally, I said at the start of the year, I would be shocked if there was a full season of football, just because of what was going on. And when we saw some of the COVID cases getting in and outbreaks in some of the teams, I'm like, oh, here we go. They won't be able to get a lid on this and keep it under wraps. But to be fair, they proved me wrong, and I will happily eat humble pie. And I'm also delighted that we got to see a Super Bowl given what's going on in the world right now. So I'm personally delighted with that. But just wanted to get your final takes on the season, lads.
Glad it happened. As you said, I did have my doubts whether we would see a full season, you know, with the first few weeks started off great. And then the cases started to come out, people training by themselves and not being making smart decisions. I think I did see a stat, though, that the Seahawks was the only team that didn't have one player on the COVID list, which is pretty impressive. To not have
You know why, right? Bill Gates is from Seattle, so that's the conspiracy there.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. The microchips that were in the vaccine there prevented them, so that's what's going on. You know, somebody's out there that fucking believes that shit. Like,
I was glad to see it. Got to see a lot of new players. Different. I wonder. Again, I don't think it would have changed the result in the winners, but teams having full actual off seasons to prepare with each other, get acclimated to their teammates. I think the whole thing, the Bucs started a little bit slow maybe at the beginning, was because they didn't have a full training camp with Brady there to learn the playbook, get in touch with his receivers on timing. I don't think having, if we had the full off season, I don't think people may have beat the Buccaneers. I just think the NFC East might not have been as crap as it was. some players there a little bit different, but you know, COVID season, the Cowboys were still, they made themselves worse than they could have been, you know, which was great. But I'm just glad it happened. You know, it sucked that for the Buccaneers that they didn't have a lot of fans there to enjoy. I put it back to, and Barry, you probably won't be familiar, but Gary and the listeners will, like, my dad and my brother support Leeds United, and it took them 16 years to get back to the Premier League. And they're in the Premier League now, and they can't have any fans at their games. And they're like a top club in the UK. And you're like Buccaneers fans that are diehard fans. And again, I know they had limited capacity at the games, but if you're a diehard Buccaneers fan, all you want to do is see Brady for the 8 games for the year, and you may get him for one game is all you can see him. You know, that's tough. Because not every team gets a player like a Tom Brady to come to them, or a Gronkowski. And especially with the Chiefs, again, limited crowd capacity, getting to watch their team come back and drop the banner at the start of the year that they're Super Bowl champions, and having to watch it all on TV, it kind of sucked for a lot of people. I think that would have been at games that just couldn't maybe afford to go this year. Maybe they didn't let go and shit like that. So, but yeah. I think what sports does is it really brings a community together. Despite everything that's going on in the world, I think people can come together and just watch a sports game and get on with each other and put all ambiguities aside.
Yeah, well, yeah, Jer, I think it's – so I'm going to say this and give a full caveat that, you know, I think the last year has been hard for everyone, but I think all things considered, you know, we've all gotten a relative level of privilege with it where – our jobs are still safe. We're still able to do what we do. It's obviously different in all this. But I would look back at the season, sports in general, but obviously the NFL in this too, of just giving something that just like brings a bit more like joy and meaning to like the random weeks. So I'll look at it like that, which is like, yes, to your exact point, Jerry. Like, I'm sure the Bucks, there's so many fans who would rather be at every single Bucks home game. Wish we could have filled out the stadium, all those things. But to me, I still take a lot of like comfort from just kind of the lifetime of memories I get from a season like this, and not even just from the Bucs, which obviously has been unbelievable, but just watching Josh Allen go from just a project to all of a sudden a real MVP candidate. Mm-hmm. Like watching real growth in a lot of cool situations, watching the Browns make the playoffs and unbelievably upset the Steelers in this like pandemonium type of game. Like we have those kinds of timepieces from a season like this that still makes it really special. And to all your points, I never thought the season would go on as it did, but I'm so happy it did, because even aside from the Bucks winning and all that, I just mean like it just brought a lot of like good memories and comfort in a time where I think we all needed it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think just watching the game the other night, like, yes, it feels like normal life has resumed with Tom Brady winning another Super Bowl, but just like just being able to watch a game where there were fans in the stadium and, you know, a lot of them are vaccinated healthcare workers that have been, you know, putting their necks on the line all year, and shout out to those people. But just being able to watch a football game with a big show and people in the crowd, and it just like you said, Barry, it gave you that level of comfort. And, you know, like normal life is like, yes, we're going to get through this. And it just gave you that feeling like everything is normal and is okay in America right now, because you're watching the Super Bowl on TV and you're seeing people in the crowds and you're seeing people celebrating. And it did. It just provided that level of comfort. It was a nice feeling, I have to say, watching that game. It was just like, yeah, we're going to get through this. It's been a tough year, but the NFL can put all these guys on a field with nobody testing positive or whatever and get a Super Bowl out of it. I think it's encouraging going forward that, you know, we can get back to whatever normal life may be.
It's also comforting seeing both your lovely faces.
Absolutely, lads. Yeah, it's been great. It's been great having you on and chatting. It's been a while, but I appreciate you coming on.
The last time I actually seen Gary was when week one or week two, when the Bucks actually played the Saints. In the first game, that first time they played each other. Barry, I think the last time I seen you was when we were lined out for like DKX or Suns.
Yeah. Remember when we used to be able to play sports? That was great, wasn't it?
That was cool, yeah.
When we were able to play flag football, even though this time of year we would have been freezing our balls off. It was, you'd see guys out there playing in our pajamas and stuff. I remember the first time I went down to the flag football league, there was literally a guy playing in his pajamas. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? In snow, by the way. It was in East
Boston. Which is so disappointing because I've driven past Cleveland Circle quite a few times in the last couple of months, and that field looks amazing.
Because it's not covered in goose shit, is it?
Like, it still is because they're still there, but not like up and down the way it normally is.
Yeah.
3 weeks down in Charlestown. But no, it's, I remember getting up Sunday mornings in the freezing cold. I could not be asked with this shit and going down. Now I would give anything to be able to get up that Sunday morning and just go down and throw a ball around.
The things we took for granted, guys. Hopefully we're going to get back on top of COVID in 2021 and we can get back to doing all this stuff.
I know. We took Tom Brady winning Super Bowls for granted and see what happened this year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now we're like, all right, Tom, you can go win another one if we get to watch some football. Right, I think we'll leave it at that, lads. Thanks a million for coming on. Lovely seeing your faces again and having all three of us chatting football. Much appreciated. And don't be having too much fun down there in the sunshine, Barry, because me and Jer are freezing our bollocks off up in Boston here.
No promises. Great seeing you both, though.
Right, that'll do it for our Super Bowl recap. I don't know when we'll be back. Maybe we'll do a draft show in a few weeks when
I actually don't want this to end.
Huh?
I keep talking about what about this guy and this guy? It's crazy that we said this over text, right? We have 45 minutes, we gotta get this, and this in, and we're on nearly an hour at this stage already.
I know. Well, that's because I was being a cheap cunt and I didn't want to pay for a premium Zoom, but I just got a message halfway through and they're like, oh, we've gifted you the full amount of time that you need. So thanks very much, Zoom, for blessing us with those extra 15, 20 minutes. But anyway, we'll leave it at that for this episode of Paddy Pigskin. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I know we didn't do much this year. Just a lot of stuff going on. Didn't have the time. But yeah, I think we will get back into it in 2021, lads, and we'll get some more episodes. What do you think?
Definitely.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. We'll leave it at that for this episode of Paddy Pigskin. Tune in next time where, as always, we will have less slant and more slantcha. Take care.